Blog Talk Radio.
Alright folks, welcome to another edition of Continue Mission. I am your host, James McCormick. We have Father Michael Pacello and we have Richard Kilblaine on the line, and we've got a show that's broke down into four segments tonight. That's right folks, February the 25th, 2022. We are here. What a day it is. Now obviously what is really, really been in the news is the situation that's going on in the Ukraine right now. What a horrible situation. Lots of prayers for those folks. God bless them. God be with them. Their president is out there with a rifle right now. Their president is with a rifle right now. When was the last time that we had a president that would probably show up in the face of battle with a rifle? I don't know. But you know what? This guy's got guts. The mayor of Kiev is out defending his town, his country. Men, women, children. Anybody that can carry a weapon, they're fighting, and they're fighting hard, folks. And I'm going to tell you right now, the Russians are going to earn every inch of soil that they gain. Eventually, they will overwhelm them, but I doubt that they'll be able to control them. This is going to be a fight that's going to go on for a long time. The first segment of the show, we're going to go into a discussion about the Military Order of the Purple Heart. That's right, folks. I am a member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Actually, I'm the national commander for the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And tonight I am going to talk about this great organization that was chartered by Congress, and it is listed under 36 U.S. Code Chapter 1405, and is the Military Order of the Purple Heart. You can find out information about the Purple Heart at www.purpleheart.org, that is .org. So, Rich Kilblaine, Father Michael Pacella, how you been doing today?
Very good, James, but very grieved over what's happened in the Ukraine. I was able to pray with the cadre in our command and staff meeting today, and I'm really looking forward to sharing together with the audience just the position that we all should have in this very dark hour.
And how about you, Rich?
Well, for me, I've lived through so many wars now, I just kind of watch it as an academic exercise. So the whys, the wherefores, and trying to predict the outcome of it, okay? And I have a great debate with a retired, you know, Army Transportation Corps colonel. Even if we agreed on something, we would argue over it. Very enjoyable. So I can share with the audience my perspective on it.
Yeah, and that'll be coming up at the last hour of the show. The first 30 minutes here of this show, I want to know, do you guys know much about the Military Order of the Purple Heart or the Purple Heart Medal itself? Rich, I know you probably got the background and the history on that. If you could, give us a little bit of a lesson on the Purple Heart and what it was used for and when it was originally created by George Washington in 1782.
Okay, well, you just summed it up. It was originally a badge. It wasn't a medal. It was a badge of merit. It was, as far as we know, it was issued to enlisted men. It was anywhere from 3 to 8 enlisted men. It was issued at the end of the war, and then it went into disuse. Okay, it was basically a purple piece of cloth cut in the shape of a heart, and then it had embroidered on it merit. Okay, and that was it. But it was for military merit, for valor. And like you said, it went into disuse. The next time we came up with a medal for valor was during the Civil War. Congress authorized the Medal of Honor, all right?
Uh-huh.
And by World War One, they came up with an additional medal for valor, which was the Distinguished Service Cross. And a Silver Star could be added to the campaign medal for valor. Okay. And I think it was 1936 that they decided to take the Silver Star and turn it into an actual medal, a Silver Star medal. And it was about the same time. I keep getting confused. Was it 1934 or 36 that they authorized
32.
The Purple Heart?
Yeah, it was 1932. Okay. They both came
in.
Because
I think it was about the same
time,
they turned the Silver Star into a medal and revised the Purple Heart. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the Purple Heart was originally just for wounds. I think went back to the original description of
yes.
it. By World War II, though, it was, because they came up with the Bronze Star Medal, okay,
mm-hmm.
which was for service and valor. And so that's when they restricted the Purple Heart to wounds. And see, during World War One, if you mm-hmm. were wounded, and that also includes gas, if you were gassed mm-hmm. and required medical treatment, They gave you a wound stripe chevron. If you find any uniforms, World War One uniforms, and if they have a chevron on their left sleeve, that would be a wound chevron. I think that's the overseas chevron. The small chevron on the lower part of the sleeve on the right, I think, was the wound chevron. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was actually, you're right. There was, and you know, the Purple Heart was only awarded to members of the United States Army until 1942, whenever the United States Marine Corps, the Navy, adopted, and of course, the U.S. Coast Guard as well. And then that was made retroactive. So there were a lot of Purple Hearts that were awarded between 1932 and, 1942, obviously. And then even more that were awarded towards, towards the end of World War II. It was a tragic, tragic war. A lot of American lives perished. Now, the Military Order of the Purple Heart came into existence in 1932 originally. And they were a very small organization. They basically maintained their status as a small organization. 1958, they were congressionally chartered. That's whenever the congressional charter came in. Up until then, they were a veterans organization. And now they are, a U.S. Congress chartered a veteran service organization. And again, the things that they're focused on is not just – if you look at the charter, if you read the charter that I just quoted to you, you'll see that the mission that they've been given is not just to care for combat wounded veterans, but we are responsible for teaching Americanism and continuously, ensuring that the history of America is kept alive in the school systems in America. And it's interesting when you look at that, they were tasked with that task by Congress. In addition to that, we also have programs for, scholarships and ROTC scholarships and ROTC awards that honor those ROTC cadets with one of the higher awards that they can get. It's a very prestigious award to be able to get the Military Order of the Purple Heart ROTC medal. And very few of them are awarded. Not everybody gets one.
Learn more about that, James, since I work with the ROTC all these years.
Absolutely.
Now, offline perhaps, so I can pass it on to the colonel, and that's really interesting. I would like to know more about it.
Absolutely, yeah. And one of the great places that you can go and get information is at our website, which is at www.purpleheart.org. Now, one of the programs I did want to talk about is about a program called the Legacy Program. And the Purple Heart Legacy Program works like this. Anyone, regardless of military or veteran status, can join and assist those who have bled for this nation. And you can do so by becoming a Legacy member. So, as you know, you have a lot of organizations that say, hey, send us $19.95 a month. They send you a pen, and that's pretty much the end of it. We're trying to build relationships with other Americans. What we want to do is we want to perpetuate our existence by creating these relationships and getting these legacy members that will come in. And it is a monthly contribution. It could be anything, from $10 to $20 a month. It's essentially whatever you can afford. And if you go to the website at purpleheart.org, you can look that up. You just go to the Legacy Program or donations. Where it says donations, it comes up. We generally don't just take donations. There are a lot of groups out there that are flying, under the radar, essentially, as quasi-organizations that they think are helping combat wounded veterans. And when you dig deeper into it, you'll find that that's not the case. the only one, and the only one that has been congressionally chartered to do that is the Military Order of the Purple Heart. So if you wanted to, you know, really assist those that have been seriously wounded in combat, I'm talking about real wounded warriors here, folks. We're not talking about, you know, just anybody that got hurt while they're in the service. And, you know, and there are programs to assist those folks. But we're talking about people that literally, you know, faced the enemy in battle, were injured by an instrumentality of warfare, and now they are, you know, part of this organization called the Military Order of the Purple Heart. And many of them need our assistance and our help. You know, as a national commander, I can tell you that I get calls every day from a Purple Heart recipient with generally with a family and a couple of kids in tow that's struggling and literally struggling with depression, struggling with trying to put their kids through school, struggling with looking for a job, or just struggling with the fact that they feel like they have no place to go or no place to belong to. The Military Order of the Purple Heart is one of those organizations that offers that level of compassion and camaraderie. And right now, we've been under a, you know, a massive fundraising attack. You know, we have absolutely faced the devil, you know, in regards to trying to raise money. And the reason is because there is an organization that flies under the name of Purple Heart Foundation that has literally trademarked the words Purple Heart, wordmarked the words Purple Heart, and trademarked the actual image of the medal. And at this very moment, you know, they have several cease and desist letters out to, you know, some big organizations. One of them is a Purple Heart motorcycle organization, you know, that goes around and raises money to help combat wounded veterans, but their children and the orphans and the Gold Star families. It's a sad situation that, you know, we live in a society that, number one, is so litigious. You know, we've got so many things going on in our world that are wrong. We've got 22 veterans a day that are still killing themselves. We have homeless veterans, and the homeless veterans are just one small piece of this. The bigger piece are the veterans living in poverty. There are so many veterans that are living in poverty, and they are literally one flat tire or one tank of gas away from absolute devastation, financial devastation. And there are groups out there that will help them. You know, the Military Warrior Support Foundation is a great organization. We work with them. Purple Heart Homes is a great organization. We work with them and support their mission. But they, like most of us, have run into this massive pushback by an organization that really only has about 11 people that control this foundation. There's about 11 of them.
Here's a question. Are they being paid?
Yes. Yeah, their CEO makes $200,000 a year.
Behind it. Because is any of the leadership in the Military Order of the Purple Heart being paid?
No, sir, no. We don't even pay our staff that works in D.C. Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Nobody's paid.
The organization that's trying to prevent everybody from using, you know, the Purple Heart image or name is making money personally off of it. Whereas
absolutely.
The organizations that are actually trying to help the veterans giving up their labor as for free is being excluded from it.
Yeah, and you know, it has been more prevalent in the history of America for this kind of, you know, tragedy that's occurring than it has been right now. And as I did some reviewing, Rich, I know you and I had a discussion about some legislation that was passed that, you know, that pulled the Purple Heart from civilians and stuff. And as I dug deeper into that, it was not the military order. It was the Purple Heart Foundation that applied their will in this matter. Because,
oh, okay. Now
yeah.
I hate them even more. Okay.
Yeah. They
I thought
did
it
that,
was
Rich.
Your organization.
No. Let me tell you, organization.
For the listening audience, just mm-hmm. to recap that, mm-hmm. there were a number of civilians. The Medal of Honor was awarded to anybody. Okay. And that included a lot of scouts. Buffalo Bill Cody
mm-hmm.
Had received the Medal of Honor. Mm-hmm. 18 Indian scouts received the Medal of Honor during the Indian Wars. And when this is very recent, what is it, 1980s or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, that at the urging, I thought your organization, and you're saying it's the Purple Heart Foundation, that no civilian can receive the Purple Heart. They revoked the Purple
mm-hmm.
Heart. I mean, not the Purple Heart, the Medal of Honor. Okay,
yeah.
For all those people, but anyway, no, I was getting at the Purple
yeah.
Heart. So when I travel down range. I travel mm-hmm. because they're both like the same. So when I traveled down range, because
mm-hmm.
I had my first convoy where I had that IED attack.
IED, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an EFP. And it normally I rode in the convoy commander's vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I just happened to make mention that, you know, we were going to roll on sword, and I'd never been on sword, which is most heavily ambushed road in Iraq. And the
mm-hmm.
guy said, asked me, he said, you want to ride up front? Well, at that time, the enemy targeted the lead vehicle, but they changed their tack that night, and they decided to hit the second vehicle, which is the one I normally rode in. And I would have been wounded. And what I learned after I got, I would assume, like, okay, I get wounded. I qualify for every medal up to the, as DA civilian,
yeah.
I would qualify for every medal up to the Medal of Honor. And I thought that included the Purple Heart because a lot of
mm-hmm.
civilians throughout, you know, from
history.
World War
mm-hmm.
on have received the Purple Heart. But no,
that's
because
true.
Of that change.
Yeah,
and,
that
and
change
now you're telling
was,
me it was that organization that
yeah,
recommended
and the guys,
that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the guys that sit on that panel now, they're all, you know, they're all... you know, Vietnam era. There are no current war veterans that sit on the foundation. I'll just tell you that right now.
Okay.
What you have is you have primarily you know, past national commanders of our organization. You know, they do an extensive amount of traveling. Of course, they get everything funded.
You know, here's the thing. I think your argument is convincing.
Sure.
So I think what you need to do is tell everybody mm-hmm. what they need to do and where they can go to
perfect.
Get that. Because now I'm sitting there going, okay, not only do we need to get a congressional bill to
mm-hmm.
now basically revoke that trademark that anyone can use,
yeah.
that the image and the name is public domain
mm-hmm.
as it should be. But I'm like,
mm-hmm.
okay, now we can revoke, you know, now we know these guys are greedy and now allow civilians who get wounded in combat to get the Purple Heart.
See, and I will tell you that I've had friends that have, like, we don't take car donations. We don't pick up household goods. But, you know, there are some organizations that work for this organization, this foundation. And, you know, we get complaints all the time. You know, hey, when are you going to come pick up our stuff? When are you going to come pick up the car? But I would tell you that if you've donated your car, you know, especially in the last 4 years, you know, no Purple Heart national program is supported whatsoever, which means our Gold Star Families program not supported by the foundation. It hasn't been for the last 4 years. the scholarship program, the, you know, any of our programs with ROTC. None of that has received any of, you know, funding from the foundation. Now, there was a time when there was a very good relationship with the two organizations, and I'm not sure what happened. Again, I'm a current war era veteran, and a lot of folks from, you know, my generation, and I'm a little bit older in this generation, but, you know, we don't believe that you should get paid. We don't believe that you should take trips and, you know, and use money that people donate with the expectation it's going to go to help a combat wounded veteran or their child or an orphan or a Gold Star family member. And while the 990s, you can go pull a 990 on this organization, you know, and I would encourage everyone to do that. I would also encourage you to go look at, you know, their rating as far as, you know, how they are rated with the nonprofit organizations. And I'm trying to think of the name of that rating company. But if you want to do something to change this, number one, no military award or decoration should ever be trademarked or wordmarked. Number one, that devalues that medal. When someone is making a profit, and I know that we'll say, well, we're a nonprofit. Okay, somebody's getting paid. You have a staff. You have a staff. You have a CEO that receives an extremely large, you know, payroll. They're getting paid because of that trademark on a medal that many people died earning. And I think it's disgraceful. I think it's just absolute. I think anybody that supports that, you know, and I'm ashamed of the Purple Heart recipients that are sitting on that board. I'll just tell you that right now. I'm very disappointed in them. But here's what we need you to do. We are trying to pass a bill that is going to eliminate any trademark or wordmark on any military award or decoration, not just the Purple Heart, but any. And we want to call that the Maintaining the Honor legislation. And essentially what that will do is that will return full control of all trademarks and wordmarks back to the Department of Defense and the Office of Heraldry where it belongs. The Office of Heraldry has a process. If you want to use a picture or, you know, you just ask permission. And if it's in good taste, they don't have a problem with you making a plaque with an image of a medal on it. They never have, you know, really, it's not hard to get that permission. And to see an organization that's went in and basically, you know, like a thief in the night, you know, and they go to the trademark office and they apply for a trademark, which, by the way, is not published in the newspaper. You know, if you apply for a trademark, then you have to, and if you're not constantly watching that, so someone could go in, let's say that you got a business called, you know, Rub-A-Dub-Dub something, okay? And somebody decides, I'm going to go trademark Rub-A-Dub-Dub. Now, unless you're on that trademark and patent office website every day watching, you would never know if someone is trying to trademark or wordmark a name or an image that maybe you've created, you own. And if you don't see that trademark being presented within 30 days and make a complaint, then you have to go through an entire lengthy legal process. And it costs you thousands of dollars. Now, the only good thing is it's going to cost the person that illegally did or, you know, improperly did the trademark as much money. And I would say that the military has enough money to go back and say, you know, to this organization, say, wait a minute, you can't trademark the medal. But they did, my friends, the image of the, you know, George Washington on the Purple Heart medal. To have that trademarked, I just think that's a disgraceful thing. And the American people, you know, there's two courts in America. There's the court of law, and then there's the court of public opinion. And the court of public opinion will side with the veterans, the combat wounded veterans, every time. And so please write your congressman. Please go to www.purpleheart.org. And we're going to have a post up there that is going to have a pre-filled out letter. And all you'll need to do is put your name and your signature and send it to your congressional representative. And it'll say everything that it needs to say about the bill and the request, the resolution that we're submitting, that we hope that one of these great congressmen or one of these great senators are going to take this and run with it. And I think that they will. I've actually got a meeting with Tom Cotton next week. So I'm excited about that as well. And I'm most certain that he will probably take that on. So that's it for the Purple Heart segment. Does anybody have any questions? All right. Hearing none, please go visit the Purple Heart website at purpleheart.org and become a legacy member and support the real combat wounded veterans of America and their children and their families that have been left behind, because we do some great things. The second segment. All right. What about, we've talked about Vets for Vet Leadership on here before. The whole purpose of Vets for Vet Leadership is to, you know, essentially try to get more veterans involved, elected or involved in Congress. But it's also about putting forth and educating voters and advocating for solid policies related to strength, security, and civility, you know. Decency. I mean, there's a level of decency in America that we really, really need to return back to. And I wanted to just kind of talk a little bit about this organization, because we had a great radio show. So I have another radio show I do on Fridays at 4 o'clock, and it's a 30-minute show. And you know, it's on a syndicated radio. So, you know, I go from a home studio in West Virginia, broadcast through Reno. It goes through radio. And then there's also, you know, we're on the Mellon program. So you actually get to see us like talking heads on Fox and Friends. And today we had an Afghan interpreter on there. And it was very interesting. That conversation with him was extremely interesting. Number one, because he explained some things to me about some Afghans that that probably got into America. No, probably to it. There are at least 50 that got into America that were identified by the Pentagon Inspector General's office as being, you know, related to or potential makers of the IEDs that killed, you know, literally, you know, hundreds of U.S. service members and thousands of Afghanis. And you'll have to watch that show, and I'll try to get a link up for this later for those that want to see it. But it's under America Matters Media. And if you go in there, just type in, you can go to Facebook, type in America Matters. You can go do a Google search, America Matters Media. And then you just want to look for Vets for Vet Leadership, and it'll have our show listed on there. But our goal is to educate voters, and we've put together a really good panel. As a matter of fact, Father Michael Pacella sits on that panel right now as one of our key advisors. And, you know, and we really want Rich Kilblaine on there. But he says he's busy.
Well, as I told you, James, you don't need a panel of friends to advise you on how to spend your money, okay? All right.
Yeah. No, what we really want to do is we want to get a diverse group of leaders that are, you know, going to, you know, advise and assist in how do we take this grassroots effort, how do we get people more engaged in not just looking at veteran candidates, but also engaging on the solid policies that are related to, like, for instance, energy security. We just talked about that before.
James, it starts with the nature and the character of the public servant. We don't use that terminology anymore. But when we talked about the Army values, we talked about selfless service. And I feel like most of our politicians, not all, they're not selfless servants. They're more, you know, serving themselves than the people. And that's why a lot of things are not getting done, because they don't have that sense of sacrifice, that sense of what it means to represent others. I don't know if you saw on TV, there was a parliament woman from the Ukraine. She had an AK. They had a picture of her. And they interviewed her. And she said, "My people aren't leaving Kyiv, and neither am I." And she realized that, you know, her life was on the line. We don't have that kind of leadership like we had in the military. You know, we could all tell our stories, but I know when I first went in, I made $245 a month, you know, and it just seems interesting that most of our politicians and even a lot of newscasters and stuff, when you look at the pay that some people get, and, you know, it's sometimes self-serving. And if we can only impress upon those that are thinking about running for office that the characteristic of selfless service, being a public servant, if they don't have that attitude, I don't want them. I don't want them representing me.
Sure, sure. You know, the other thing, too, is when we look at policy. You know, we had this, you know, look what's going on in the Ukraine right now. Now, our energy policy, and you know, obviously, you know, some people didn't like Donald Trump, okay? Some people didn't like Donald Trump. Some people didn't like Barack Obama either. But, you know, during the Obama administration, the last 2 years, you know, we really were able to secure some milestones towards energy independence that was further, you know, pushed during the Trump administration. And there was a time when we were exporting fuel. Now, imagine, I want to ask you both this, and I want you to speak on this because I know it's near and dear to your heart. Imagine if we had a group that was advising and educating the voters on just that policy, and we could have maintained energy independence, and we would have been a net exporter. We would have been the ones providing energy resources to those European countries that are right now saying, we don't want to push Putin too much because he's going to cut the tap off on us. What's your thought?
Well, no. My Congress had no say in that. This was all done by executive orders. Mm-hmm. It was executive orders that ended drilling and pumping on federal lands. I mean, there you go. All right. Everything was done by executive orders. Congress passed no laws, prevented us from being an exporter of oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what has been done are several restrictions. You know, for instance, you know, I go to fill my gas tank up. Look, it's painfully evident that something has happened. What? Not everybody knows. They just know that one day I'm paying $1.85 for gas. Now I'm paying $4, you know, and that's painful for folks. And it's going to get worse, especially as the Russians continue to put the squeeze on. This is why that we need an organization like Vets for Vet Leadership, like Vets for Energy, like veterans that are involved in policy and decision making. So it's not just about, I think that that's just one small part of it. But I do think it's a lot about veterans being able to speak on why it is important for us to have a supply system and that is dependable, not just in related to, you know, masks and cleaning supplies. And look, we saw what happened when COVID first hit, and it was crazy because we were running out of masks. If y'all remember, they were running out of, machines, to intubate people with. And
supply chains and some of the mm-hmm. things that the military understands about logistics. I had mm-hmm. a debate with a professor that I work with before the invasion took place. And there's just certain things that military people understand that others don't. And I'm not saying that we have to have all military people, but a lot of the police officers that I've worked for or have educated or have shared with have had a military background. And not that you want necessarily every police force to be a SWAT team, but there are just certain things about mm-hmm. logistics, certain things about supply, certain things about serving, that I'm afraid that we don't have any longer in our quote-unquote public servants. And no, I think it's just common sense to be energy independent. And, now we're really in a difficult place where now a barrel is $105. It's going to go up. It's going to go up. And we just haven't been thinking about the supply chain or the logistics of things. And I think a lot of the decisions that have been made tactically and strategically haven't had the wisdom that we should have gained through many other situations that we've encountered in history. So I really think that the character of the person, male and female, has an understanding of something that I think can serve our country better than it's being served.
Mm-hmm. No, I would definitely agree with you on that. There's just something to say about that experience that and the American people, generally the majority of them, not all. I mean, there's a lot of Zools out there. I call them Zools, Z-U-L-E-S, is that they don't like the military. They don't like veterans. And believe me, I've ran into people like that. And it's okay. That's what America's about. You have the freedom. You don't have to like me. You really don't. But I think that the majority of the American people want to hear what the veterans have to say. You're a respected member of the community, and people just want to know,
And you're not provincial. Most of us have been all over the world.
Right.
I try to tell my students, we live better than 75% of the world. And people that are provincial that haven't been just, from sea to shining sea, can't give the perspective. And I'm not talking about just taking a visit to a country, but living in the country and traveling. I think that really enriches a person's perspective.
Sure. Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're right. And so there's a website that I'd like to drive people to, and it's called, VETS, that's ETS, the number 4, VET, that's VET, leadership.org. So it's VETS, 4, VET, leadership.org. And I think it would be really good for folks to cruise on over there and check it out because, honestly, the only way that we're going to be able to, get ourselves into a position to where we can start fixing and addressing some of these things before we just totally go into chaos. This is not about a bashing of the current administration or the past administration or any administration, but we have had a few setbacks. In the last 7 or 8 months. And, if you look at the Afghanistan withdrawal, which was just terrible, You know, and then if you look at, you know, what's going on in the Ukraine right now, which we're going to have a whole hour of our show dedicated to the Ukraine and the heroism that has been displayed. I would not want to be a Russian that is going into those cities right now, because I really believe that, you know, I really believe that these guys are going to be very hard to dig out.
All right. Let me throw something in there. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The cost of the Ukrainians, we used to have a name for them in the 18th, 19th century. They were called, up to World War One, they were the most fiercest fighters.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe. They were called Cossacks. So those Ukrainians, in fact, Russia, the Soviet Union, hated those Cossacks so much because also the Cossacks sided with Germany during World War One because they did not like communism. And
mm-hmm.
they exiled a lot of Cossacks to like Uzbekistan and places like that. But when you think
sure.
of Ukraine, you're thinking of Cossacks. They're fierce fighters.
Yeah, and you know, that's going to be that is an awesome thing that we're going to be able to bring here in the next 15 minutes. I'm excited to hear more about that because, you know, I want to see the Ukraine people. I want to see them prevail. I do. I want to see them win. I do. And I think that there's a lot to say about people's spirit and heart. And just like I want to see veterans succeed and I want to see our country succeed in spite of the many, many forces that are out there, you know, even in our own country that are working counter against our own constitution and against, you know, basic freedoms and individual liberties that just – it's surprising, you know, on the Vets for Vet Leadership radio show today, I was just shocked to hear what Fahim said about how many, you know, people that, you know, the Taliban let out of prison. And these are very dangerous people. I mean, these are murderers and rapists and you know, the whole sort. That snuck into the Kabul airport and snuck onto military aircraft. Thousands of potential, you know, terrorists. And him and I talked about that today. And he says they weren't vetted. And he said, the next thing you know, they end up here. He said, and now you've got this, these advocate groups out there that are advocating to essentially just Let them in. They made it over, you know, these poor Afghan people. And some of them are poor. But this is part of the education of the American people that is not being done. And this is where the veterans, and this is where a group like Vets for Vet Leadership and a panel of wise people, much wiser than I, that can, you know, put that message out that, hey, you know,
Can I speak, James?
Yes.
To something
yes.
else concerning that, because this again comes to physical courage and moral courage, where veterans many have had to learn how to exhibit physical courage and moral courage. Sometimes with politicians, they become chameleons.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid of, you know, the public opinion. They're afraid to stand up or what people might think about them. And it's unfortunate. You know, we've talked about, you know, Teddy Roosevelt in the past and different people that really had a moral compass. And nobody's perfect, and no one who criticizes them is perfect themselves. But I think, again, in drafting veterans that have had to show physical courage and also moral courage will be able to face down the enemy because they have before and not just go with the flow and go with the polls. and things of that nature. Again, I go back to character. That is what makes a good leader, a problem solver, a servant leader, but someone who has physical and moral courage and wisdom, as you said, obviously. You learn it from those experiences.
Now, I want to point out, all right, just because you're a veteran doesn't mean you have the physical moral courage, even if you receive the Medal of Honor. Now, you're going to argue with me that you're going to
think that
a Medal of Honor recipient lacks moral courage?
That would be an exception. You know, if something happened and they happened to be there.
So we're describing Bob Carey. Bob Carey. So
I remember him.
Al Gore and George Bush had that little debate down there in Florida. And the Democrats wanted to throw out mail-in ballots. Guess who they brought in? Because they knew most of the mail-in ballots were from soldiers serving overseas. They brought in Bob Carey, Navy SEAL, Medal of Honor. Look, everything you're trying to say is, if a Navy SEAL or a Green Beret is running, we got to back those guys. Bob Carey was willing to sell out soldiers, sailors, airmen serving overseas. If there was anything wrong with their mail-in ballot, if an I wasn't dotted and the T wasn't crossed, if the officer didn't stamp it the right way, wanted that ballot thrown out. And that's against the law.
Yeah.
So just because, I'm going to tell you, the vast majority of veterans, but we live in a time, and here's the thing. I had this conversation with somebody.
Yeah, self-serving. Yeah.
The problem is, once you've been in politics so long, you've sold out so much, you have lost your moral compass.
That's the problem. Well, and that's what Vets for Vet Leadership is about. It's about trying to refine that moral compass, and trying to, regain some direction and focus. We're not out here, just beating the doors down and looking for a bunch of money and all this other crapola that goes on. We're really looking to, advance the American cause, to bring a voice of wisdom. And I wanted to go back real quick to give you an insight of what's going on now in the current state of affairs in our political climate. So once the failure, the fallout or whatever you want to call it, the retreat or whatever that occurred after, we departed Afghanistan and the country fell. And thousands of refugees were on planes that left. Everybody remembers the scene, of the Afghans hanging on, to the aircraft, wheels and stuff and falling off and being killed. But there were literally thousands that got out that were non-documented, no identification, have no idea where they came from. And clearly some of them have now been identified, at least 50 anyways, that made it to the United States, to one of our U.S. military bases that were directly tied to the manufacture of improvised explosive devices that killed Americans and killed Afghanis. And my question to everyone is why would we want to advocate for a policy that is going to essentially open the doors and, they made it here, because there was chaos. Chaos creates an opportunity. Chaos created a great opportunity. Also, a laissez-faire attitude created an opportunity that 11 people utilized on 9/11 to just absolutely organize and create the worst attack on U.S. soil.
Love playing the devil's advocate.
Right? I know you
did. Let me answer that one. I can't remember. I don't know if it was General Mattis or who, but he was telling a story when he was in Iraq, And he had he was interviewing an Iraqi who was involved in IED attacks against Americans, right?
Mm.
And he was questioning this guy on why he was doing it. And he explained, you know, because he was pretty much caught up. He's kind of like a January 6th guy that walks into the Capitol building. And in fact, I can't remember the name of the author, and he talks about accidental guerrillas, which are, they are, you know, they're not involved in the movement. They are there. It's their locality, and they get caught up in the moment. And anyway, this guy goes, so here he is. He is now in a prison captured by Americans for attacking Americans. And he asked this general if this is going to hurt his chances to go to America.
Okay.
Of course, yeah. The general's laughing. But in this man's mind, you know, he is attacking Americans because they're there, they're in his country, and it's the popular thing to attack. But if this guy had a choice, he would rather be living in America. So I want to tell you, the question is, so those, how many did you say, 11? So
we 11? Have 11? 11 people,
right,
on
so
9/11.
We have 11 Afghans who were working with ISIS or whatever, have managed to infiltrate into this our country. Mm-hmm. The question is it because they want
there were 50
insiders
that were identified,
part of the sleeper cell, or do they really want to live here and escape the BS that they were a part
of? We don't
know,
but I'm not willing
right,
to take
so,
the chance.
So here's the question.
You know?
Are we qualified to judge them?
No, but that Afghan interpreter could definitely determine what they're going to do. And so here's what I'm saying.
No, I don't think he can. I don't think he can. I'll tell you this. All right. I'll tell you this. Now, you hated Trump. You hated Trump. But during the Trump administration, All right. Describe it any way you want. But I'm going to tell you this.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this. All right. I forgot the name of his Secretary of State, but let me tell you, they were expelling MS-13 members left and right. All right. See,
mm-hmm.
the thing is, if here's the thing. So we got these immigrants in here, and they're breaking
mm-hmm.
laws. There is the majority of them want to embrace the American. They risk everything to come here. But then there's the bad ones. Like the MS-13 guys, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going like, you're un-American. Send them back to where they came from.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Really curtailed that. You know, I remember watching a video of a bunch of two or three Muslims who were so offended by a Christmas tree in a mall that they were tearing it down. I'm like, oh, you don't want to be in America. Okay?
So
right.
You can have good judgment without being judgmental.
The point is,
I have a friend.
We have American values. So it's like,
yes.
So for those guys,
but
who are
I'm not judging
they come
you
here,
if I show good judgment.
Right.
If my friend's going to take his car and he's had too much to drink, I'm not judging him, but my better judgment tells me take his keys away. I'm not judging him. I'm showing good judgment because his judgment. So I don't think anyone's judging the intention of the person. And I understand, Rich, what you're saying, but
mm-hmm.
still, that does not dismiss the evil that was done.
All right.
It doesn't mean that he's going to all of a sudden
Father Michael,
come over here and
as
different.
You know, because I've played the devil advocate with you. I'm just playing the devil advocate. All right.
Yeah,
I'm just creating an argument.
Well,
the point
here's,
is, I'm sitting there going, it's hard mm-hmm. to get I can't even remember the term now, but anyway, you know, to turn a new leaf. The point is, if these guys really diehard ISIS terrorists, they're not going to change. Mm-hmm. But there's
exactly.
always that possibility that, you know, these guys are like, I'm the accidental terrorist.
But see, that's
and they come here
Rousseau
and they
thing.
Actually want to get away from that. and embracing American lifestyle.
We have a philosophy.
But I would watch it. I would say this. I would watch them very closely, and if they so much as try to tear down a Christmas tree or put up a sign that you can't walk your dog in my neighborhood, you're going back to your shithole country.
Yeah. Well, here's what
there's
I
a philosophy
to say.
That says we're basically good from Rousseau, and that it's the environment that corrupts us. But from the Christian and Jewish tradition, the first sin was committed in a perfect paradise. And so I'm not so sure. Even there's not been a whole lot of change in people unless they came to Christ in prison. I had a corrections course years ago, and we had this thick book, excuse me, and the professor got up and said, we're still in the dark ages as far as rehabilitation or corrections. So I don't know, unless there's really a major change, that we're going to see anything take place.
Yeah, well, it's important that I go back, because I think that I didn't get a chance to fully explain what I was saying about these 11 and the 50. And so in the conversation, and you really got to watch this radio show, it's 30 minutes. It's maybe 18 minutes of airtime. It's valuable. Watch it. I'll get a link for it. But what Fahim said was, he said that, you know, that 50 were identified as you know, makers of IEDs that actually made the bombs that killed U.S. service members. 50 of them got into this country that they were able to identify. 50 known terrorists that fought against us in Afghanistan. And the problem is, and the way he explains it, is there are so many of these groups. There are a couple of groups that are out there. They're very active, politically active, and they are pushing very hard, you know, a liberal-sided push, pulling on the heartstrings of Americans. You know, obviously we feel bad. You know, we want to be able to, you know, Fahim and his three-year-old daughter and his wife, you know, obviously he worked 11 years with the U.S. forces, 11 years that he worked for us while he was in Afghanistan. How many times he escaped death, I don't know. But I do know that, you know, they were all on a hit list at one time. But explain this to me. He says, now you think, I said, how many potentially could have got in? He says, thousands. He says, because during the chaos, they were loading the military cargo planes. And in those military cargo planes, you know, there were a lot of, you know, people that just got in. You know, they rushed in, they sat down, and they said, well, we'll figure it out when we get you to wherever you're going. And a lot of them got to the U.S., nothing, no ID, no nothing, no clothes, nothing. So, and they're being housed right now. You know, they're still here in America. So,
but
when we talk about the relationship,
James, hold on a second. Now let me finish.
This is the important part. This is the important part. I said, are we setting ourselves up for a future potential 9/11? He says, it took 11 people to do the attacks on 9/11 to take those airplanes down. 11 terrorists did that, folks. 11.
All right.
How much damage could thousands do?
Right. I'm going to tell you the difference.
Okay.
We know those Afghans that came in. I would assume we're monitoring those Afghans that came in. We are not monitoring the illegal aliens coming across the southern border.
True. We are
turning them loose. But I'll bet you, we are vetting and monitoring all those Afghans are coming in. So even if they had built IEDs against the Americans, I'm playing the devil's advocate here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That seriously is like, hey, they fit in the accidental terrorist, accidental guerrilla model that I off the top of my head, I go down and read the book and I could give you the name. It's a book. Go online, go Amazon, type in accidental Gorilla. It's a good book. And
that's interesting.
It's like your gorilla by circumstance, by locale. And so they could have been that. And maybe they really want to embrace. But otherwise, I'll bet you our government is watching them, but they are not watching those that are coming through the southern border.
Well, and the understanding is this, that they're not watching all of them, because some of them have left these camps and are among the American population. You know, and I'm telling you, he paints a pretty good picture. And some of these we've got a lot of Afghan interpreters that are back. My suggestion would be for the U.S. government to reengage those Afghan interpreters, to send them into those internment camps and to go and visit these places to determine, you know, who these people are, what they did, and try to get some background on them, because they would know better than anybody else in America, I would say.
And you're right, because we don't have enough manpower to do that. You know, my son's still trying to get his interpreter and family here. As we transition into the Ukraine thing, I was approached by a newspaper person this week, and he was compiling some questions for General Wesley Clark. And I sent a question, and a really two-part question. And I was wondering, because he asked me if he had one thing to say. He was compiling a list. He's a person that I've been mentoring. He works for a major newspaper as an editor. And I was wondering, as we transition into the Ukraine, what would you two gentlemen have said if you were asked to send a question to General Wesley Clark as regards the Ukraine?
Well, let me just close this segment out, and then I'm going to go right into it. So we're going to close out this segment of Vets for Vet Leadership, folks. Go visit Vets for Vet Leadership at vetleadership.org, and go check it out, folks. So transitioning to that question, I am going to tell you that my experience with Wes Clark's son over the Keystone Oil Pipeline, Rich probably remembers some of that, was not positive. Do you remember that, Rich? Do you remember General Clark's son? And
Yes. The guy, you know, the guy is supposedly a warrior on his knees crawling before Native Americans, who is a warrior culture, pleading their forgiveness. He lost more credibility to those Indians than anybody could. I mean, that is, he's a bleeding, and his dad is not much better. So,
right.
I'll let James answer the question, but Father Michael, I don't have a thing to ask Wesley Clark. I saw him on the news today being questioned by CNN. The guy, look, he was politicized, and he became a Clintonite from the beginning. And everybody I've talked to who served with him in the military, he was very dysfunctional. He was not, his claim to fame was he was the NATO commander during the Bosnia situation. He was dysfunctional.
He was the 7th Corps commander.
Now watching this have no idea how dysfunctional this guy was. This is what I've been told. Okay, people have served under him, all right? I don't have a high opinion of him, so I have no question to ask him, because he's basically, you know, going to espouse whatever is going to
get. Yeah.
The guy served for his own, to get attention. That's it.
I would, if I was to ask him a question, I would preface it with saying, don't answer it as the man you are now. answer this question as the man that you were 30 years ago or further back, because even as – I think he was the commander of the 7th Corps, right, in during Desert Storm, correct, Rich? I think I'm correct on that. But anyways.
He may be. I don't remember his role in Desert Storm. I just remember his claim to fame was he was the NATO commander during Bosnia.
So, you know, I'm kind of with Rich on this. And, you know, I mean, I would like to be able to not agree with Rich on this, but come up with something. But I don't think I want to give him any options.
I'm sorry,
James.
I'm sorry. I have to pick another topic to argue with you on.
But I don't think I want to give him any oxygen to grow. I really don't. I would rather ask General Petraeus the question. Yeah.
I felt it was not – well, it was interesting because my wife, when she was an 82nd Airborne as a civilian instructor, worked under his leadership and knew his wife. And he said the other day on TV that Putin wouldn't invade. I just felt like it was an opportunity. I was asked by a newspaper person who was compiling some questions for him, and I just let it out, you know, what I felt, you know, needed to be. And I added Afghanistan and not completing the mission and the soldiers being from Fort Bragg that I know.
So
that
you
have
got
no
to ask
rules
a
of
question.
Engagement. Yes.
So you
yes.
did get
that
to answer
the question.
I'd like to hear what you said. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. But here's the deal.
I don't know.
Here's the deal. I listened to the interview. I listened to his interview on CNN, and all he was doing was sensationalizing the situation. I don't know whether he really believed what
he
was
saying. He's a creator of it. I mean, he supports
the
group that created it.
Let me tell you what the media is doing right now. War is good business. You know, someone challenged him and said, the media loves war, and they're all coming back saying, no, we don't. There's so much death and stuff. Why do you talk about it all day long? Because
I've got the
everybody is
that I was asked.
We have a war right now going on that has potential for escalating, and the media, the major media, is competing for nation's attention.
Yeah, we're gonna grab
are
that
escalating
too.
It, and you've got guys like Wesley Clark. You know, let's see, CNN brings in Wesley Clark, and Fox brings in. Oh gosh, I can't remember his name. He was
Keen.
In charge of Haiti.
I was under Keen.
There's two guys.
Jack Keen.
Keen.
Kellogg.
That's right. Keen.
Yeah, I still was under him.
Kellogg.
During his coin. Yeah.
Well, they have Petraeus in there, too, today on some different shows. I can't remember which ones. But
I didn't see
him.
Was
the
Keen,
from the
Keen is a regular old Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so let's go back to what – let's go back to what Father – hey, Father Mike, what was the question that you asked?
Yeah,
you said you got the
you.
Question.
I just brought it up. This is a newspaper person. He said, if you had one question for General Wesley Clark, K. Clark, on current Ukraine situation, what would it be? I'm sending a list to him, and this is what I wrote. Why have we overextended our military by not allowing them to complete the mission in Afghanistan, where we also abandoned people and supplies, and now we have sent a small contingent to Poland with no mission or rules of engagement? I said we should send supplies to Ukraine, but instead deal with our own invasion on our southern border. So he said, thanks. Poland question is interesting. And then I said, we have a friend there with 82nd Airborne. Thanks for asking. And so on and so forth. So that's what I was asked to do. And I thought I would take the opportunity. Maybe I could have consulted with both of you. But I just felt like, you know, let me seize the moment. There's an opportunity, whether it does anything you know, good or bad, I think he at least wants a perspective other than his own or something that would be more liberal. So
well,
what would
yeah.
you both have done, you know, in light of what I shared?
Well, I think that you asked some really good questions, but, you know, ultimately it's like, you know, when I ask the questions of the current, you know, issues related to veterans and things as the national commander of the Purple Heart, you know, there are certain people that, like Rich says, they only want to live in an echo chamber. And I believe that Wesley Clark is one of those, that he just wants to be in a place where he is only hearing the sound of his own voice and those that support what he says. So I hope that your question reaches him. I'm sure that it will, you know, he will be sickened, you know, especially when you mention anything about the porous southern border.
Right.
And, you know, and the failure of the Biden administration in the retreat from Afghanistan. He's, you know, now with this current crisis, you know, we can also tag on the current energy crisis that we have. You know, you can hang that, you know, you can hang that monocle on those folks as well. I don't know that he has anything of value to offer in this. I really don't. I just, you know, he's talking to only the liberal media. And I don't know. I just, you know, I golly, Ned, I agree with Rich on this thing. I hate to do it, but I do.
It was the liberal media that questioned me. And so I think any veteran or somebody who has an opinion, and this person, you know, I have a very good relationship with, but I just felt like I needed to say something because they've been asking me all along whether or not I believed, you know, we should send soldiers. And I had a debate with a history professor. There are a couple history professors that I work with, Rich, that I'd love you to meet. And, you know, the one was convinced that we weren't going in or that Putin wasn't going in. And I shared some things and, you know, what President Clinton did back in 94 when they gave up their nuclear weapons in 91 and the promises. And he was talking about policy, this and that. And, you know, being a veteran and having been in a theater, and not to the extent of my son or you, James, but I think we have an understanding of tactics and strategy and things of that nature. So when I went in today, you know, he apologized to me. And he was pretty assertive, you know, kind of in my face a little bit. And I just think that not just opinions, but I think, as you were saying earlier, James, we have to educate. And, you know, there is evil in the world. We can't underestimate. And, yeah, we're all sinful. We've all done things we're not proud of, countries as well. But when you know someone's on a mission, you know that they're going to take it as far as they can. You know, historically, Russia's, you know, taken three steps forward and the world community yells at them and they take one step back. And so it's just really interesting. And I just wish we can dialogue and have discourse in the public square without being polarized by politics and a partisan spirit. And that's why I think veterans can speak more authoritatively. And I said to the guy, you're not a veteran, just like when my son was going to a counselor. He says, he's not a veteran. He doesn't understand. Mm-hmm. And I just think that we are the ones who have gone, and when these people are so quick to send soldiers when they've never gone themselves. And I was very offended by President Clinton. 30 years later, he talked about that he went and visited Vietnam. But when they wanted him to go, and, you know, I'm offended by that. All of a sudden, you know, it was unjust and this and that. And so I just think that's another reason that veterans should be in those places so that people, you know, I say this even to the priest that I love in the Catholic Church. We and the Orthodox were married. St. Paul said, the husband of one wife, children who believe. When I talk celibate brothers, and they have a place, but I understand more about family life, about marital problems, about different things like that, because I've been married. And I just think that we have experience where other people just have policy and theories. And that's right. When I talked with Professor, and, you know, today he had a different attitude. And I wasn't trying to gloat, but there's just some things you don't understand. You haven't been around not, like I said, to your extent, but I've been around dead bodies that were, you know, shot down or whatever took place. And, you know, it's just a different thing than just, you know, looking at it from a political perspective. So we have to get more veterans, especially when it comes to these types of decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I think, you know, I don't think, I know that we need more veterans in office, and we need more experienced voices, and we need less people that are just simply carrying the water for a political party. You know, I cannot stand, you know, an apple polisher. You know, I mean, if you, or someone that's just a, you know, just placates all the time. That's all they do. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, they say whatever the Clintons want to hear. They say whatever the Trumps want to hear. They say whatever the whoever wants to hear, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not a fan of that. I'm a fan of
courage,
you know.
That's right.
And
All right. So, because we still haven't even, we're barely talking about Ukraine, but I wanted to just add this, okay. So when we talk about getting more veterans in Congress, all right, it's because we want people who are going to represent the voters, not sell out to the party line. Because the problem is once they get there, we want people with the moral courage to stand up for what they believe. Now, that just doesn't include veterans. That I'm an advocate for independent because I am an independent, and independents don't really have a lot of choices. And the problem is, I watched this commercial by Michael Douglas, and he talks about it, where he goes, you know, what's the solution? And he shows the evidence that basically Americans are voting; they don't have three choices; they have two choices. Democrats, the left or the right, Democrats or the Republicans, and they're so far removed, no one is, there's no compromise anymore. The gap is wide, and so you're voting for the lesser of two evils. And what it really comes down to, if you're a Democrat, you're always going to vote for a Democrat because the Republicans are evil. If you're a Republican, you're always going to vote for a Republican because the Democrats are evil. It's the swing voters that are actually going to decide who gets elected. And they're going to have to choose between the lesser of two evils because most third-party candidates don't. They really don't believe they stand a chance. But if right now Congress has such a low approval rate that all the people who don't trust Congress vote for the independents, the third party candidates, they actually have a chance to win. So you have a choice, right? If the veteran has the moral courage to stand up to his party leader, vote for him. If you got a third-party candidate who really has conviction to stand up for what he or she believes, vote for them.
Because the approval rate on Congress, the last I heard, was 11%. Perhaps you have a more updated.
Yeah, nothing is that low. Seriously, nothing is that low.
So there's a lack of confidence. You know, I was talking just about leadership. And sometimes when a person doesn't exude confidence and they're uncertain about what they're saying, they don't give you any real sense of stability or security. I'm not talking about arrogance or hubris, you know, being cocky, but if Congress has that low of a rating, then the people that are there, and we've seen it on both sides, have not had the moral courage. They've been concerned about going back another 2 years or going back another 6 years and, you know, job security. And we got to get people, you know, that wasn't the original intention. It was you go serve your country and you go back to the law firm or you go back to the, you know, grocery store or whatever, you know, the citizen servant. And I just think that we've gotten away from that. And we have to talk about term limits. These people that have made you know, a life out of it. And it's amazing how rich people have gotten being public servants. I don't know too many people.
No, no. Let me
get
this.
In the military. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Separate
Let's talk about post World War II. Post World War II. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest complaint now is we got to tax the rich. We got to tax the rich because the gap between the rich and the poor is the widest it's ever been. Post World War II, we saw the greatest distribution of wealth, the largest mm-hmm. middle class we've ever
right.
seen in history.
Mm-hmm.
Post World War II, the largest, well, moving into the largest percentage of veterans serving in Congress, probably rivaling Civil War, because I don't know if they kept the statistics during Civil War. But it was that World War II generation where nearly everybody served. If you didn't serve, you were scab. But that resulted in the greatest distribution of wealth and the rise of the middle class that has declined since
mm-hmm.
then. So
yes.
that, I would say, that would be a good proponent for why to vote for vets. But only if vets have that moral compass. Because
yes.
up until Wesley Clark, if you look at it, the war before him was Desert Storm, Schwarzkopf. Was he going to run for
right.
office? No. All the generals before them had nothing to do with politics. Wesley
right.
Clark, I'm going to say right now, as a historian, Wesley Clark is the beginning of the politicization of
mm-hmm.
retired general officers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have so many flag officers, that's admirals and generals, who come out and they'll sign a petition. Hey, I support this guy. I don't like this guy. Whatever, they come on the news. I mean, you can count on Myers being on CNN. You can count on King being on Fox. Okay, they're regulars.
Mm-hmm.
They have become right. politicized.
Mm-hmm.
That changed with General Wesley Myers.
Clark. Yeah. No. I think that's really important. You see, the Bible talks about a partisan spirit, you know, and a party spirit sometimes, you were saying it earlier, Rich, you don't even think about, you're just loyal to that party no matter what, rather than being loyal to your conscience. For me, if someone is pro-abortion, I can't vote for them. I don't care how great they are. I can't vote against my conscience. And I think we have to get back to values and being governed by principles. And then these people should represent us. But now, you know, there's not a whole lot of qualifications. You know, when you look in the scripture, what the qualifications are for a priest and for a deacon, there's certain standards, you know, whether it's not lingering too long by the wine, being a husband of one wife, children who believe this and that, you know, there's a standard. And look, nobody's perfect. No, I'm not saying that. But I think that if we just, you know, look at somebody because they're charismatic, they're good looking, you know, you talk to a lot of people that voted for President Kennedy. Oh, he was so good looking. Yeah, but I don't know. How deep did that good go? And I think, you know, we pay as a nation. You know,
actually, that was funny because you mentioned that. Because I grew up during that time frame, and
mm-hmm.
you know, Kennedy was so charismatic. But after his, you know, 20, 30 years later, after his charisma faded, people started asking the questions. So what did he really accomplish?
That's right. I've
you know,
said that myself many times.
Those of us
times.
Who lived during the during Kennedy's era, we thought he was like the greatest president ever.
Right.
But as time passed, his charisma faded, and we started looking like, okay, other than the Cuban Missile Crisis, the guy didn't accomplish anything. And
right.
the diehards would say, well, his administration was cut short. I like, yeah, so what did he do? achieved during those that time frame.
Right.
Well, you know, and now we find out he was such an adulterer,
right,
that
right.
the press ignored that, but it was getting so bad that had he lived another year, they would have had to have exposed his adultery.
Yeah. I read some of the book of one of the college girls he had coming in and out of the White House while she was in college. It was so vile, I couldn't read it anymore. And, you know, I guess before people die. No, but because someone was assassinated, we make a hero out of them. And I just say, nobody's perfect, even priests and deacons. Nobody's perfect. However, there's got to be some standard, some character. You know, if someone is dishonorably discharged from the military and we're vetting them, you know, to be a leader, obviously that mm-hmm. would disqualify them. And so I'm just saying there's a certain standard, you know, that, that has to be upheld. And you, the countries know better than their leaders. And we have to look honestly at ourselves
mm-hmm.
and say, are we really a moral nation? Look at the leadership. The Queen of Sheba said about Solomon, and I'm not talking about his morality. I'm talking about his wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
God must really love you. Look at the leadership. You know, and I look and I say, sometimes I think we get the leadership that we deserve because we're
yeah.
really not much better. We're not much better. We were better, and then we could put a standard higher and say, you have to represent certain things in order to have this sacred trust. Every time I do a prayer for a commissioning, James, I'll always talk about
mm-hmm.
it being a sacred trust. This is a sacred
Amen.
Trust. You know, and I just try, you know, I say a lot of stuff in the prayer, but especially that, and so too, those who are entrusted with leadership like that, they have to be worthy of it. And, you know, we're talking about cadets, we're talking about people and people that get disqualified from the
mm-hmm.
military for various reasons, even the vaccine, this and that. There's certain standards that if they're not adhered to, height and weight, then
mm-hmm.
you're disqualified. Well, why shouldn't we have standards for those who represent us? Just because they're good-looking or they're intelligent or charismatic? No,
mm-hmm.
they've got to stand for something, not fall for everything.
Yeah, I think that you said the word, you know, charisma has got more people elected than intelligence. I will tell you that. And,
yeah.
and the lack of intelligence. And look, it's not that it's saying that voters are not intelligent. The lack of mm-hmm. like military styled intelligence about who this person really is
yeah.
has got people propelled into these offices. And then I do want to read this little tidbit about the Ukraine that we put in here.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to ask a few questions, and number one is, you know, what do we think has led to this unprovoked attack on the Ukraine, and how has our current policy failed to deter this and could be setting the stage for a similar attack on Taiwan by China, who's obviously
mm-hmm.
watching
mm-hmm.
this? Was our
sure.
retreat from Afghanistan and the way it was handled essentially a green light for the Russians and Chinese, who now perceive America as weak? Has
yeah.
our loss of energy independence and being an exporter of energy also left our allies to the mercy of Russia? Those are the questions that I really would like to dig out. So the first one is, what led up to this unprovoked attack on the Ukraine?
All right. It was not unprovoked. That is the propaganda. All right.
Okay.
I am a traitor. If you listen to the leftist news, I am a traitor because of what I'm about to say. It is not unprovoked. You have to look at both sides of the situation. All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me ask you this. Why would you even consider Russia invading Ukraine because of that we did not provoke them into? What did we not do?
I don't think
listening.
That we did anything.
All right. I was about to cut you off.
No,
sorry.
I don't think that we did anything.
All right.
I don't think that the Ukrainians did anything
because,
to deserve
because
that.
You have listened to our propaganda. There is no news anymore. There is no unbiased news.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to American propaganda. All right. You need to listen to what Putin has been saying. He's been saying it over and over and over again. All right. The message is clear. Do not admit Ukraine to NATO. Do not admit Ukraine to NATO. The way the Russians see NATO and are not only admitting countries on the border of Russia into NATO, but arming them and training them is an aggressive movement. That is an act of an aggression. And all, when you listen to Biden and, he's going to say Russia is trying to recreate the Soviet Empire. And Russia, if you look at the history of Russia, when Russia became a contender in Europe, the difference between, say, Russia and Germany and France is Germany and France share a common border. But Germany came a unified country, a power to contend with, did not share a border with Russia. You have all these different countries between Germany and Russia. These are called buffer states. So the history of Russia is having buffer states between you and another power. In other words, Russia doesn't fight in Germany, and Germany doesn't fight in Russia. If they're going to have a squabble, it's in these buffer states. That's why Poland, which is a great country, has a problem of the fact that it's a buffer state, and it's either dominated by one of the countries or the other. So, invading Ukraine is wrong, but I have lived through so many wars. I just look at it as an exercise. I've already said this many times. I lack empathy. I only have empathy for a few people because, I've just seen so much crap over my life. I've seen too many people died. I've been in too many shithole countries in my life. It goes back to Honduras, my first deployment to Honduras, and I'm sitting there and I'm seeing these children with swollen bellies because of malnutrition, and I turned to my team sergeant. I was Special Forces, and we're training the LSALs, and I turned to my team sergeant, and I said, can't we do something to it? And he was an SF, he was a former SF medic, and he told me to, I had to callous my heart. He said, if you want to help them, then you need to give up your job and become Mother Teresa. But if you want to stay in Special Forces, you need to harden your heart and focus on your mission. And our mission was to train. And I've seen so much of this, that malnutrition, and it's all a product of the mismanagement by the government, that I harden my heart to it. So when I look at Ukraine, I'm watching at it as an academic in how this war is conducted. And I will tell you this. We provoked Russia.
We.
If you look at the Russian perspective of it.
Yeah.
You know,
I understand
all right,
that, Rich, but you don't think that he had an agenda? I have heard that, and I understand, that he may be paranoid and they say he's been altered, but I think there's a
wait. No. All right, that is another argument. All right, so there is an argument out there that Putin has become crazy, but I believe there's a whole logic to what he has done. But continue.
No, I just think that as an evildoer with an agenda, he's almost 70. Think he wants to be another Stalin. And I mean, when I think of those people, the thing that hurts me so much of the people underground, starving, dying, civilians fighting for their country, ages 18 to 60 men cannot leave the country because they have to defend it. And when I look at all the horror, you know, he might have an axe to grind, but he's really, you know, I taught laws of war in the Army. He's breaking all the laws of war and the way he's gone about this. And so I think that he's had it in his mind for years, the way he lined things up. I do understand, and that shows us when we have a resentment, because he said the worst day in his life is when, you know, there was the breakdown in 1989 of the Russian Empire. But that shows when you hold a grudge and resentment what one person can do. And, even if we tried to appease him and say, no, they're never going to become a part. But the fact that the president, I'm talking about President Clinton, in 1994, you know, made this agreement and, you know, they gave up their nuclear weapons. I just think that we made them vulnerable. And I think that he has seen weakness, as James has said, as far as making the move that he's wanted to make.
Right. Okay. So, yes, we did convict because most of the nuclear missiles were in Ukraine. And when the Soviet Union broke up, we got Ukraine to give up because we did not want Ukraine to become a nuclear power. So we got them to give up their nuclear arsenal under the agreement. We would protect them. All right. And then we move into the Obama administration when Russia invades Ukraine and annexes Crimea. Here's the deal. So you've got to look.
The Budapest.
If you only look at things from one side, our side, you're going to go to war. You're going to go to war.
I mean,
how
the Budapest memorandum from President Clinton, don't we have a moral obligation after they've surrendered their nuclear weapons?
Got it. Okay, here's the deal.
Okay.
Here's the deal. I'm just going to put it to you this way. All right.
Okay.
If you listen, all right, I am looking at, look, because I like playing the devil's advocate, I look at both sides. All right. So I am playing it as objectively as I possibly can. I am ignoring the propaganda from our media. And that's both the conservative. Because it's weird because the conservatives are siding with Russia and the liberals are siding with, you know, against Russia. Here's the deal. Putin has said over and over again, do keep Ukraine neutral. Do not admit NATO, Ukraine to NATO. So what do? We say, all right, we're not going to say it's off the table. We're going, it's on the table, but we're going to delay the decision. That doesn't give Russia and Putin any comfort. You got to listen. All right, so Putin's an evil man. Let's say he's an insane man. So why are you going to provoke him? Why are you going to provoke him? Here's what I'm going to tell you. When Putin surrounded Ukraine with all those forces, he was forcing NATO to answer this one question. Are you willing to go to war over Ukraine? Now, I'm going to ask you right now, what is the answer? Is NATO, is the United States willing? We are sending troops to Europe. Are we willing to go to war over Ukraine? Are we?
I don't think we...
Yes or no? Are we willing?
No.
Are we going to commit troops to defending Ukraine?
No.
Is Germany going to send troops to defend Ukraine? No.
Probably not.
That's an easy one.
No
NATO country is going to send troops to defend Ukraine. Russia forced NATO to answer that question. Now, the question is, here's where I was wrong. Because if you go back to last week, I would have said Russia would not have invaded Ukraine. When they went in to the breakaway republics, it was uncontested. They were going into areas. There was no bloodshed. See, I believe that Putin moved those troops in there to embarrass Biden, because Germany is not going to stand up against Russia. France is not going to stand up against Russia, and England is not going to stand up. England maybe more than the others, but definitely Germany is not going to stand up against Russia, because it is addicted to Russian oil.
Right.
So
and
the
they
only
don't have
country
a great army
everybody
either.
Is looking to is the United States, and Biden blew it really bad with the withdrawal from Afghanistan. So Biden's administration is failure after the other. The only success this man has had is he got one bill passed, and that is major bill. Now that is the infrastructure bill, but everything else has been a disaster. He needs a foreign policy success. So Biden, if you listen to what Putin says, which most of you are not, and you listen to what I'm talking to the audience, what you listen to is what the mainstream media is telling you, and that's all propaganda. It has been consistent from Russia. Keep Ukraine neutral. Don't admit them to NATO. Give us a guarantee you're not going to admit them to NATO. All right. So why did Putin send troops into the breakaway republics? Because Biden had threatened Russia and Putin that if they entered Ukraine, he would take action. So Putin challenged him. He crossed the border. Not in an invasion. He crossed the border into a bloodless entry into the breakaway republics. He recognized the breakaway republics as independent, and they asked for peacekeeping troops. They drove in. Okay.
Yeah. We did that with Crimea, too.
I know. Well,
yes,
right. So then, but here's the deal. So then Biden starts talking about, no, Putin's not settled, comfortable with that. He wants to occupy the whole country. And if he does that, we are going to in place these sanctions. So what does Putin do? He invades Ukraine. There's two ways to look at this.
You don't think he already had that excuse? I think he had it in his mind all along, and he saw a weakness. I think that was one of James's questions,
right.
And this was an opportune time. I understand your logic. I really do, but I don't think he's a rational man.
I don't think he's
a spiteful person and that he's just reacting, you know, because when President Biden said, oh, I'm the only one who's ever stood toe-to-toe, you know, that's a joke. He's laughing. He's not really afraid of anything, especially with the nuclear weapons that they have. But you had said something about weakness, James. I think that would be a good thing to talk about from here.
Yeah, well,
that's all right.
And again, we got to remember what happened with Crimea. You know, I mean, this is not the only time that this has occurred, and it's occurred under different presidents. And the fact is that
different president? No, one other president. What was his name? Russia invaded Ukraine and annexed Crimea under what president? Trump. Was it
Obama?
Trump? Oh, it was Obama.
I think so.
Okay. No, it was. It wasn't Pinky. It was. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
My point is there's a pattern here. Everybody says Trump was a puppet of Putin. We had no problems with Russia when Trump was in the presidency, but we had problems with Russia when Obama was the president.
He knew that he was as crazy as him. He knew that you couldn't.
Right, wait, hold it. No, crazy is, no, here's the thing. All right. So crazy, insane, whatever, is an easy excuse. Mm-hmm. So we can sit there and going, all right, look, the conservatives say Biden is senile, right?
Yeah.
And now we're saying that Putin is an irrational actor. Why? How old is Putin? You said
69.
How old is Putin?
69.
How old is Biden? How
79.
Old is Biden?
79.
And so who do you think is going to be more irrational in this conflict here? And who has a better track record at foreign policy? All right. We already know that Robert Kennedy said that Biden has been wrong on foreign policy. 40
yep.
years he's been wrong.
Gates said that.
Biden,
yep.
Putin has a lot of experience at this. Okay. Look, I believe
KGB.
This is a game of chess. All right. I've heard the comments. I've seen the mimes, whatever. This is a game of chess. And chess is won by who can see the most, two things. The most moves ahead, who is thinking the most moves ahead, and can see the most options. The media, the conservative media jokes that Biden is playing checkers. I really believe Biden is playing poker. In poker, you're bluffing. You have a single hand. You're not thinking any moves ahead. You're playing the hand you got, and you're bluffing.
Yep.
And
I believe Biden
has got so much experience at this.
Mm-hmm.
He sees every option. He knows everything that Biden could possibly throw at him, and he is ready for it. Okay?
But I think there's still something very insidious about Putin, something very evil motivating. You know, when I think of the atrocities, you know, I don't know if you remember when I was at the schoolhouse, I did a thing on the My Lai massacre, and I was threatened to be fired because I offended 350 senior NCOs. And, you know, we've got to be self-deprecating sometime. And I think if we assess the situation and the suffering, did you see the tank going over the car with the lady in it?
Yeah.
The old lady in it? And if, I mean, come on, this is a sick person. This is not the rules of war. He's off the rails, and I just think that he can't be trusted, and he has an agenda that he just looked for the proper time. I think it's been for a long time,
yeah.
And he's probably thinking, you know, I'm 69, I'll be 70 this year, you know, when am I going to make a name for myself? And I just think that I get everything, but I don't think you're dealing with someone that you can, you know. Somebody told me today that Mike Tyson said, you're rational until somebody punches you in the mouth, you know? And,
that's not the thing. Now, what Mike Tyson said was everybody has a plan until you get hit. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Here's
sorry. I misquoted. But the
right.
thing of
so
it
we,
is,
we've,
I don't think he's right. rational.
All right. All right, I know. That theory has been proposed several times. All right. If we're looking at Biden and Putin, so the counter to Biden's senility is that Putin has become crazy and irrational. But here's the deal. So I, in the short time we have left, all right, I was wrong. I did not think Putin would send troops into Ukraine. And here is the reason why. Because Ukraine will resist, and it will lead to another cannot afford a long, drawn-out guerrilla war like Afghanistan.
It's going to get one.
Except I'm going to tell you what he's really after. He is after Kiev. He wants to gain the capital and gain as much ground as he can, so then he can turn around and negotiate a withdrawal. And the reason is because once he has captured ground, he cannot occupy Ukraine. As you said, the president of Ukraine is carrying the AK-47. Everybody is willing to resist. Let me tell you, the reports I'm hearing, paratroopers were landing on that airstrip outside Kiev, and civilians were shooting them. The Russian army has been surprisingly stopped and delayed by the resistance of the Ukraine army. All right.
You're breaking
Putin
up, Rich.
Doesn't want to,
but only one-third.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Only one-third of the strength has been utilized.
Here's my point. Mm-hmm. Can you guys hear me? All right, here's the thing. Putin does not want to – this is my prediction. Putin does not want to occupy Ukraine. He wants to gain enough ground, especially the capital, so that he can negotiate a withdrawal and come out with what he wants, a guarantee from NATO that they will not admit Ukraine into the organization, that Ukraine will replace.
Well, he made the same threat
said all along.
Well, he's made the same threat to Finland and to Sweden. You know, just so you know, I mean that same threat has been made.
And my point is, he does not want any country. I don't think Putin wants to occupy those countries. He just wants to make sure they are not adversaries.
Yeah, and I just
think
he's just.
You don't
think
he wants to own them? I don't know. I think he wants.
If he could, look. If he could, he would. But the problem is, he can't.
He's a dictator, man, and that's all he is. He's just.
He cannot occupy Ukraine without a long, drawn out.
You know, I'm
going to
say this. We've only got 2 minutes and a half left, but I'm going to tell you this: Putin's a dictator, and Americans need to stop praising him as some kind of a great leader. He is, I think he has a mental illness. I do. I think that he is unstable. I do believe that his intentions are malevolent at
mm-hmm.
best.
Right.
I do see his actions as being much like those of Saddam Hussein's actions when he invaded Kuwait.
Mm-hmm.
And I just see him as a reckless guy that, he didn't do this during Trump's administration because, you know, he is a typical bully when someone faces
mm-hmm.
him down. I think when Trump shook his hand and jerked the crap out of him in that meeting, he was like, whoa, hold on a second. This guy's probably going to kick my, you know what, you know?
Right.
And I think that was one thing that Trump did that was really good. You know, he put him in check. He let him know I'm the alpha male here, you know.
Amen.
And I think that, well, you know, and I know a lot of people had a lot of memes about, him and, Putin kissing each other and stuff. But I don't think that was the case. I think the case was is that Putin finally saw someone that was just as ready to go as he was.
I'm going to disagree with you. No, I'm going to disagree with you. Here's the thing is.
We only got a minute, though.
Trump did not see Russia as an adversary. Here's the thing. Russia is a threat to Germany, not the United States. Russia is a threat to Germany, not the United States.
And
obviously, Germany is not going to raise a complaint when Russia invades Ukraine and annexes Crimea.
Yep.
Why should the United States be one to stand up against Russia?
Because we've always been the country of decency.
Voicing the complaint, why are we the ones that have to stand up against Russia?
Hey,
that's
folks,
we
appreciate you coming
people.
On here tonight. We've got 25 seconds left. I just want to tell each and every one of our listeners, thank you for listening in tonight. We'll continue this discussion. We don't know where the Ukraine will be at by next Friday. But let's pray for the Ukrainian people, and let's pray that they stand strong and they defeat the Russians.
Amen.
God bless you, and God bless America, and have a good and glorious weekend. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.